On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. He holds the distinction as the longest-serving state legislator in our country's history, an attorney and World War II veteran who was first elected to the State Assembly in 1956. And at the end of the current legislative session, Democratic State Senator Fred Risser of Madison plans to retire. We're talking about his life and career. What do you want to ask Senator Risser in this exit interview? What do you want to know about his six-plus decades in politics? Do you live in Madison? How do you feel about his retirement? We're at 800-642-1234. Senator Risser, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Glad to be with you, Kate.
Well, how does the pandemic compare with other crises that Wisconsin has faced during your time in office?
Well, we've always had different crises. We've had crises on a number of issues. I know, you remember the Vietnam War was full of crises. And then before that, we had civil rights movements. So there's one movement after another, and it's par for the course.
What makes this crisis stand out? What makes it unique?
It's a current crisis. That's unique. As I say, during the Vietnam War, we had thousands of people descend on the Capitol. And then before that, the civil rights movement. So as I say, it's unique only in that it's present. I think it shows that the public wants a change. The legislature is a little slow on these things, and the public is deciding to petition the legislature through various means. And this is a democracy. This is the way we operate.
Well, the state legislature has passed one bill in 4 months here with the pandemic, and we look to our neighbors like Minnesota, where, you know, Minnesota has put forth 200 bills. What do you think is going on in the legislature?
Well, you can blame the Republicans for that, quite frankly. They have control of the legislature. They have control of both houses of legislature. They have control when the legislature meets. The governor has called several special sessions, and the legislature's come and gone because of the Republican leadership. Quite frankly, we should be passing some bills. We should be in session and handling a number of issues. But when the power structure, the legislature, refuses to meet, there's not much we can do until we change the makeup of the legislature. And hopefully that will be done in November.
Former Governors Jim Doyle and Scott McCallum, they criticized the state government for a lack of leadership in the crisis last week in talking with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Do you agree with them?
Yes, I do. I think that the leadership in the legislature, which, as I say, is currently a Republican leadership, is derelict in its duties. They refuse to meet. As I say, the governor's called several special sessions, and the legislature comes back together, and the Republicans immediately adjourn it. That's not the way we should be running state government, and I'm very upset with it. Hopefully, as I say, the voters of this state will change things in November.
You've worked with hundreds of state lawmakers over the years. What makes someone a good representative of their community?
Well, I think a good representative has to represent the views and interests of his constituency. If he or she doesn't do it, the constituency should vote the legislators out. Voting is key, and it's something that people have to do if we're going to maintain our democratic way of living. A good legislator, of course, will go down and be diligent, not only represent the views of their constituency, but be actively involved in what's going on. Oftentimes, legislators procrastinate. They do not act necessarily in the views of their constituency. Sometimes the constituency doesn't know what a legislator does. In Madison, of course, legislators live in the district in which they represent. Their Madison legislators, I think, are very receptive to the views of their constituency. But legislators from about the state sometimes leave their home territory, come down to Madison, and their constituency doesn't necessarily know what's going on. I think the public has to know what's going on. The press has to be diligent. I think a legislator that represents his or her district and informs their district. What's going on is a better legislator than one that doesn't, of course.
We're talking politics with Fred Risser, the longtime state senator from Madison who plans to retire in January. You can join in. What questions do you have for Senator Risser? What do you want to know about his life or career? What do you want to ask him in this form of an exit interview and his experiences in the six decades and plus that he's been in the Capitol? Join in at 800-642-1234. You've called authoring the statewide smoking ban one of your proudest accomplishments. Why does that stand out to you?
Why does that seem what?
Why does that legislation stand out in your career?
Well, I'll tell you, it stands out because it took so long to adopt. When I started out in the legislature, smoking was legal, regardless of your age, and just about anywhere in the state. I remember going to movie theaters and having to move around because the people in front of me were smoking, and I didn't like it. This is unique in that it took almost 40 years to adopt. When I started out, I introduced a bill back in the early 1960s to make cigarette smoking illegal for those under the age of 16. The bill only got one vote in the committee. That was mine. And they voted it down. And you had the lobby interests, you had the tobacco interests, you had interests of the food industry, restaurant interests. Just you had a number of people that opposed any changes. You know, the public has had about a 180-degree turn on that issue, but it took a long time and took persistence. It wouldn't have happened unless those legislators like myself had continually worked on this subject matter. Sometimes bills take a long time to pass. The public has to change philosophy sometimes. Sometimes the public has to catch up to the legislature, but oftentimes the legislature has to catch up to the public.
What should our state lawmakers do to curb the rise of teen vaping?
What should the legislature do to what? Excuse me, I didn't understand.
To curb the rise of teen vaping that we have seen in recent years?
I'm not quite sure. The legislature has to, should be acting on various issues. Unfortunately, the legislative setup is such that the party in power has control over the agenda. And if the party in power does not want to take up an issue, it won't be taken up. And so it's sometimes very frustrating for those of us that want to act on issues when the majority party decides they just don't want to act.
You've been called overseeing the restoration of the state capitol building, one of your largest accomplishments. Why do you see that?
There again, an issue that took many, many years. I was the author of the Capitol Master Plan, but it takes more than the master plan. It takes money. It takes persistence. And the Capitol had to be renovated over the period of several different governors. And every time a new governor came in, they had new ideas. And so we developed the Capitol Master Plan, and we were able to continue it through several different administrations and several different legislative activities. As I say, it lasted over 10 years, and we had to make several different appropriations. It cost more than we originally anticipated. And when you're upsetting people by moving around and putting new structures in the building, building new walls and cleaning things up, it is all difficult. You know,
well, we have to pause there with State Senator Fred Risser about his years in the legislature as he prepares to retire. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have a line to State Senator Fred Risser, the longest-serving lawmaker in U.S. history. He's preparing to retire as his term ends in January. He's worked with 13 governors of Wisconsin in his 64-year tenure. What do you want to know about his work and legacy? What stories and remembrances would you like to share about his time in office? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. And Senator Risser stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's go to Mo now, joining us from Oconto. Hi, Mo.
Oh, and hi, Fred. Thanks for being there. Two quick questions. One is that Back 40 mine, even though it's on the Michigan side, it borders our, it's going to affect our side of the river also. Why doesn't Wisconsin have some say in that? We're kind of been shut out, it seems to me. And then my second quick question is, have you ever seen any kind of shenanigans or corruption like the Republicans played out when the governor was elected and they limited his power? Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. And Mo, the first question is about the proposed mine, the Back 40 mine, which would be located next to the Menominee River, which flows into Lake Michigan and has raised concerns about potential pollution. State Senator?
Well, I think environment is something we should be spending quite a bit of time thinking about. You know, without environmental protection, none of us would have anything to do. We wouldn't have jobs. We wouldn't have civilization as we understand it. And I agree completely that the legislature has defaulted on its environmental necessities. I want to answer the second question, though, which is why did the legislature take all the power away from the governor? I think that was outrageous. It was undemocratic. It had never happened before. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, on a divided Supreme Court, decided that that legislature was okay. The majority of legislature, of course, are Republicans, and they decided to take away the governor's and the attorney general's power. The attorney general can't even settle certain cases without legislative leaders coming around and being briefed. And then, of course, they're out of town, go to share the time, and we're losing lots of money on some of those cases that should be settled out. It was an outrageous movement by the majority party, and that's why I think elections play such an important part. I think we have to change the makeup of the legislature to protect our environment better and to go back to the democratic method of the executive taking care of the executive part, legislature taking care of the legislative part. I think the voters have to decide that they don't like what's going on and they should make a change.
Mo, thanks for calling. Let's bring in David now in Shellsburg. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like the senator to tell me why he voted in favor of calling for a convention of states under Article 5 most recently.
Yes, that vote was in a committee, and it was an error. Quite frankly, it was in the committee. The committee asked for a vote by mail, and it was a mail ballot which came out the wrong way, and that has been corrected. I can tell you that I'm absolutely against this convention of the states. It would be a terrible mistake. And when the bill comes to the state senate as a body, if it ever does, I will be voting against it. This was a committee vote and an error, and I admit that was a paper ballot which was marked wrong, and it has since been corrected. And as I say, if it comes to a vote on the Senate floor, I certainly will vote against it. That's a bad idea.
David, thanks for the call. Speaking of voting, there is an election this month. There's an election in November. How do you feel that Wisconsin should handle absentee voting, mail-in voting?
Well, I think that the mail ballot voting should be handled as it should be handled. I mean, I think it's perfectly appropriate. I know the President of the United States votes by mail, and we go right on down. Many people vote by mail. In six states, they use the mail ballot completely. They don't have any in-person voting. It's all done by mail. How do I think about it? I think it's a good idea. I've just turned my ballot in for the primary election, And I intend to vote by mail this time. I think it's perfectly legitimate. And as I say, many others do it. I support it.
Well, next year, lawmakers will redraw the state's election boundaries based on the 2020 census. What should be the guiding goals of that redistricting process?
Well, it couldn't be any worse than it was last time. The gerrymandering of the state legislature was, again, outrageous. You know, we had over close to 60% of the vote was Democratic, and yet over 60% of the assembly was Republican. And that isn't quite reasonable. It isn't fair. I think that the governor setting up a citizen reapportionment committee is an idea. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. As I say, gerrymandering is one of the things in government which is unfortunate. I hope that the reapportionment will come out a little fairer, and if it does, I think you'll find a much more closely divided legislature, and I think you'll have a better legislature if you have a reapportionment that more or less represents the views of the people.
We're talking politics with Fred Risser, the longtime state senator from Madison, who plans to retire this year. Let's bring in another call. Nick is with us from Stevens Point. Hi, Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. I just have a quick question. You know, my biggest concern right now is how divided the Democrat Party and the Republican Party are. And, you know, in the past with some of our leadership, even at a countrywide level, we've been able to at least come to an agreement and work on some stuff to make the country a better place for all of us to live. And I just want to know your take on how we can get back to that, because right now it just seems like we're more divided than ever.
Well, first of all, let me say I agree with your observation. I think we are more divided than ever. In my 64 years in the legislature, I can't remember any time when we're as divided as we are. In fact, we find that more votes are straight party line votes in the legislature now than ever before. I think, quite honestly, that it trickles down from the national level. I think the division started on the national level and is sort of trickling down to the state level. But admitting that that's a bad thing, your question is how are we ever going to get out of it? The only way we're going to get out of it is by electing legislators that will go to work and changing things. In other words, some legislators try to change things, but until there's a majority that will do that, they are going to be changed. And so I go back to elections. What makes our country great is participation, and people have to participate in the process to make the process work. Unfortunately, currently the majority is not doing what I think the majority should be doing, and it's going to take a change in some of the membership of the legislature to bring about a change. The only way we can change it in a democracy is by selecting individuals who will help make the change, and it's up to the voters to help bring those individuals to the forefront. It'll happen. It'll happen, but it'll take some work.
Senator Risser, what do you consider to be your biggest legislative regrets?
I think probably the biggest regret I have is that my father did not live long enough to see his son participating in government. My dad was a district attorney for a number of years. He was also in the state Senate, and he and I were very close. He passed away before I had a chance to really get to the leadership positions I had in the legislature. I enjoyed 40 years. I was in leadership. I was the president of the state Senate for 25 years, minority leader for a number of years, a co-majority leader. I've enjoyed my legislative process, and I don't really have any major regrets, as I say, other than that my father didn't have a chance to see his son develop.
Are you still biking on your birthday?
Up through the 91 years of age, I was able to bike my age in a single day. And then I had a little accident between a car and a bike. And so I'm not biking as much as I used to do. But up through 91, I was able to bike my age in a single day. And I still bike whenever I get a chance.
Well, State Senator Risser, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Kate. It's always a pleasure to be on your program.
Fred Risser is a Democratic state senator from Madison and the longest-serving state lawmaker in our nation's history. He plans to retire at the end of the current legislative session. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. We talk about the August 11th primary election and answer your questions about voting. What do you need to know? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back with more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting an elections update ahead of the August 11th partisan primary that will narrow the races for head-to-head matchups in November. A little over 23,000 absentee ballots were rejected in the April primary, mostly because voters didn't get the signature and witness portions of the ballot envelope right. Some problems happened in post office facilities. An inspector general report last month found hundreds of absentee ballots never made it to voters or couldn't be counted due to postmark issues. What questions do you have about absentee ballots, early voting, voter registration, election security? We're at 800-642-1234. Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Megan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So Thursday, the Elections Commission called an emergency meeting to talk about the governor's order requiring masks when people are indoors. What did the commission discuss?
So the commission ultimately unanimously recommended that all voters wear a mask when they're voting at the polls, be it in-person absentee or at the polls on election day. However, you cannot add any additional qualifications to voting. So if someone is not wearing a mask, then they still must be offered the rights and the opportunity to be able to cast the ballot.
Do poll workers have enough masks to comply with the order?
They do. So we actually have already distributed supplies such as disinfectant, hand sanitizer, and masks for both the August and the November election for all of our polling places in every one of Wisconsin's 1,850 jurisdictions. So right now they have the supply that they need not only for August, but for November as well. So that leaves us a little extra time if we need to get even more ahead of November.
For in-person voting, how will poll workers verify someone's identification if their face is covered with a mask?
Sure. So the law says that the voter must reasonably resemble their photo ID. In many cases, a voter is still going to reasonably resemble their photo ID. If you can see their eyes, you can see their hair, you can see some distinguishing features about the voter. However, if the poll worker cannot determine the voter's identity, they can ask them to very briefly remove their mask so that they can verify their identity. The governor's order actually does have an exemption for verifying somebody's identity.
So in terms of election management, how is the August primary shaping up to be different than the statewide election in April?
Well, you're going to see a lot lower turnout in August. Now, of course, we always hope that's not the case. We want, you know, every eligible voter to go out and cast their ballot, but you usually see a lot lower turnout in an August election. So looking back historically, in the August partisan primary in 2018, there was about 22% of voters that turned out. In the 2016 August partisan primary, it was closer to 13% of voters. And so a lot fewer voters typically at this election, which means that the polls are not typically busy. It's not an election where you're going to see lines. And also, I think now because of the awareness of absentee ballots, all Wisconsin voters have the statutory option to cast their ballot either by mail, in-person absentee, or at the polls on election day. And I think due to additional awareness, there's a lot of voters that for this August election have already asked to get their ballot sent to them by mail. And so I think the poll workers are prepared. They've been training for the new social distancing protocols, for having safe and sanitary polling places. And, you know, I think voters, too, know more what to expect when you have these types of interactions. And so we expect that the poll workers and the voters will be well prepared.
Do you have enough poll workers?
So poll workers is tricky. So we're still hearing from a lot of our jurisdictions that their regular traditional poll workers are not able to serve or willing to serve. And in smaller communities, it can be really difficult, especially to find enough. And so I think, you know, as we head into August, and certainly as we're looking forward to November, as Wisconsinites, I think we all need to recognize this need, this opportunity for us to be able to serve our democracy and to work with your local election official if you're able to be a poll worker. It's a really remarkable way to be able to service our community, our democracy, and every single community in Wisconsin would be thrilled to have a poll worker volunteers. They're going to need to have backup lists. They're going to have a deep bench as we head into November. And so I think the more volunteers we can get is a great thing, again, so that we can all service our democracy and make sure that it's functioning as it should.
Yeah, it seemed in April that poll workers, you know, waited until the 11th hour to make a decision as to whether they would be able to work the polls. How would you handle that in August and November as poll workers wait to decide?
Right. You know, and that's why it's so important that we have a strong list in each of our communities. So every single community in Wisconsin, we have 1,850 cities, towns, and villages. You have a clerk, you have a local election official, and they're responsible for recruiting and training poll workers in their community. And so, you know, we don't know who's going to decide that on election day they're not able to serve as a poll worker. So that's why they need some really comprehensive lists of people. So that if they have any shortages, that they're able to turn to other citizens in their community to be poll workers. And so we work a lot with the clerks on contingency planning, on making sure that they know how it would impact their municipality if they had fewer than anticipated on election day to be able to open polls in the statutorily required way.
We're talking about the 2020 elections with Megan Wolf, the administrator of Wisconsin State Elections Agency. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to know about voting in elections? Do you plan to vote in the upcoming statewide primaries for Congress and seats in the state legislature? What local races are you watching? And what elections bring you out to the ballot box? We're at 800-642-1234. Megan, looking more closely at absentee ballots, are election clerks more prepared to handle the volume of absentee ballots?
So the volume shift has been significant in our state. As you've probably heard me talk about before, that we had about 6% of voters that were casting an absentee ballot by mail in elections prior to April 2020. In April 2020, we saw more than 60% of voters that were casting their ballot by mail. So as you might imagine, it went from a process where a clerk in those local jurisdictions was able to write on an envelope with a pen the voter's address. They'd put a stamp on it and they'd send it out. When you're seeing these larger volumes, we now have to figure out ways to help make that process more efficient. And we've done that with the help of our clerks. So we work really closely with those local election officials to understand their process, to understand what they need, and to help develop tools and technology to be able to help assist them in that process. We've also worked with the USPS to do things like put what's called intelligent mail barcodes on the envelopes, or at least the ability for a clerk to use an intelligent mail barcode so they can track it through the mail process. And also so we can help them identify if there's an issue. If a group of ballots never hits the mail stream, they can contact voters, see if they ever received them. They could cancel those ballots and reissue one to those voters if there is some kind of problem. And so we've been able to work with the clerks, work with the Postal Service to really develop a lot of efficiencies that will help the process be able to run more smoothly and to make sure that we can identify any errors that might occur.
How are you working with third-party mail service that have had issues in the past and recently with 270 ballots in Milwaukee?
So the state does not contract with any mail service. So I think it's important to know each of those local municipal clerks, they're the only ones under law that can issue absentee ballots. So be it the city of Milwaukee or a really small township up north, each of them have a clerk, and the clerk by law is the one that analyzes the absentee application, determines if the application, the photo ID is valid, make sure that voter is registered to vote. They then issue the ballot. And so some large jurisdictions might use a third-party mail service to help them meter the mail and get it through the system. We don't have any control at the state over that process, but what we can do is recommend that all those jurisdictions develop a very robust chain of custody, a process to make sure that all the ballots are accounted for through every touch point. And again, I think things like the intelligent mail barcodes and knowing if something hits the mail stream, having an anticipated delivery date, being able to see when that ballot has been delivered and received are all really important points in that step, especially for larger jurisdictions that might have a mail service. It allows them to identify if something's gone wrong and they need to follow up and cancel and reissue those ballots.
Let's bring in a call now. Doug is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question for you guys. A couple of real quick questions. First of all, I'm not really savvy to the voting process, but I got a smartphone and I've been trying to get the different candidates that are running for the offices in Wisconsin. And I was wondering what would be a good website to look. And then my second question is, I recently retired, and I was wondering where you could go to volunteer to be a poll worker.
All right, Doug, thank you. Megan, two questions there. First, on getting up to speed on the candidates, and second, about volunteering.
Well, thanks so much for those questions, Doug. The first one, unfortunately, I can't help you out a whole lot on that one. So as the state agency that administers elections, we're required by law to be nonpartisan, and we can't give out any information about the candidates themselves. That being said, it sounds like with your new smartphone, probably if you Google even, you know, the candidates that you're looking for, the race in the state of Wisconsin, I bet you'll find some great resources and information about those candidates. But unfortunately, us at the state, we're not able to provide that information to voters. And I'm sorry, what was the second question?
The second question is how to volunteer to be a poll worker.
Oh, well, and that is an excellent one. So there's a couple of ways. One is you can get in touch with your local election officials. So your city clerk, your town clerk, your village clerk, they're the ones that are responsible for recruiting and training poll workers. And we also now on our website. So if you go to the state's website, myvote.wy.gov, you're going to see, I want to become a poll worker. Click there, enter your information, and we'll get your information right to your clerk so they can contact you about opportunities to be a poll worker.
We have the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf. We'll be back in just a moment on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf as we explore how local clerks are preparing for the August 11th partisan primary amid the pandemic. Let's bring in another call now. Tammy is joining us from Greenfield. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. Good morning, Kate and Megan. Thank you for taking my question this morning. Official primary ballot for the partisan office. And the second question would just be, is there a class that they could start teaching? Because nobody walked into the poll when I was a kid and taught me how to fill these out.
Tammy, you broke up there with that question. Can you say it again?
Sure. First one was, is there a class that we could see and watch on how to fill out our ballot forms? Because it's confusing. In the first black square, it says, special instructions for voting in a partisan primary, and it says you may vote for only one party's primary. And I'm confused because every one of these black sections, they are party. Does that mean I can only I don't understand how to fill in my circles. Can I register for Republican Party to vote for other people? And then can I also vote Democratic to vote for other people? And the same for congressional and county.
Yeah, Tammy, thank you for that question. Megan?
Well, thanks so much for that question. I think, you know, you bring up something that we hear a lot during the partisan primary. Here in the state of Wisconsin, we have what's called an open primary. So that means as a Wisconsin voter, you actually don't register as a party. We don't know your party affiliation. We don't know what kind of what ballot you cast. And so you are able, when you get your partisan primary ballot, to choose what party's primary you want to vote in. Now, the thing is, you can only vote in one party's primary. So you can almost get that ballot as if it's three ballots, one for each of the parties, and you can only choose one. So if you choose to vote in the Republican primary, you can vote for all those contests under the Republican ballot. You can choose what candidates you'd like to move on to the general election, but you cannot cross over into one of the other parties. If you do that, there are some safeguards, but if you do that, that could actually invalidate your ballot. But if you look at the top of your ballot, so when you start reading those instructions, you're going to notice there's a little place where you can indicate which primary you'd like to vote in, what party's primary you'd like to vote in. And I think of that as sort of a safety mechanism on the ballot. If you choose a party and say, this is the party's primary that I want to vote in, that's the only primary or section of the ballot that the voting equipment or the person that's tallying the ballot is going to look at, because you've indicated that's the primary you're going to vote in. And so then if you do cross over, those other votes will be ignored and won't invalidate your vote for that particular primary. So you can choose whatever party you'd like to vote in from election to election for those partisan primaries, but you can only choose one. And in terms of a class, I love that idea. I think, you know, there's a lot about elections and the mechanics of how it works that I wish, you know, there was a lot more opportunity for us to all learn about what goes into it. But that being said, we are working right now on a lot of educational efforts built on information we've learned from voters about what they need to interact with the process. And so you can look for some more videos and things that we'll be putting out from the Elections Commission about how to vote your ballot, how to make sure that your certificate is completed when it comes back. And we're going to get all that out ahead of the November election.
Tammy, thanks. Megan, there was a lot of confusion around ballot envelopes and the witness portion and the signature portion and the address. What are you advising clerks as these ballots come back?
So the statutes lay out exactly what ballots can and can't be counted. So, for example, state law says that all absentee ballots must be in the hands of the poll workers by 8 p.m. on election day. The law does not allow for any late return. So if somebody's ballot came back the day after the election because it took a long journey through the Postal Service, it couldn't be counted under current law. Now, that's not to say the courts couldn't intervene at some point like they did in April and extend that deadline. Another thing that the law says is that each voter must sign their absentee ballot. So you have to sign to certify that you are indeed the one that filled out your ballot, that you voted it, that you're a lawful registered voter. And then you also must have a witness sign your ballot. Now, your witness, I shouldn't say your ballot, your certificate envelope that your ballot goes in. And your witness, again, is verifying that you are you, that you are the one that cast your own ballot. And they can be anyone of your choosing. They just have to be an adult, U.S. citizen. It can be somebody you live with. It could be your spouse. It even have to be somebody that you know. They just have to verify that you are the actual person that marked your ballot. We've also put out some guidance about how somebody could even do that potentially electronically if you're trying to make sure to accomplish that social distancing and have some type of barrier between you and that person. There's some guidance on that as well. And so looking at that statutory framework, each of those poll workers are what we call absentee ballot canvassers in each of those polling places around the state has to make determinations on if that certificate meets the requirements of the law. If it does, that ballot's going to be counted. If it does not, then the ballot cannot be counted. Now, another reason why, if you get an absentee ballot, make sure you get it requested early and get it back early, because if there is a deficiency on your certificate, so they're not going to open up your ballot before Election Day, but if your certificate has a deficiency on it, the clerk may be able to contact the voter, let them know about the problem, and have them come in or send them, send it back to them so that they can fix that problem before Election Day. And so I think as we all, again, head into November or August, too, there's a lot of people who request the ballots for August that haven't returned them yet. Make sure you get those ballots back early. It could take up to a week for those to come back in the mail. So make sure they come back early so that the clerk can identify any issues that might be there.
We're talking about the 2020 elections with Megan Wolf, the administrator of our state's state elections agency. Let's bring in Allison now in La Crosse. Hi, Allison.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about putting ballot boxes around town, like in libraries or City Hall or other places where people can put their absentee ballots without having to use the Postal Service. I know they do that out in Oregon and Washington. I was just wondering if there's been any talk about doing that here.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So, each city, town, and village has a clerk, and they get to decide what are the best ways for them to service their customers, their voters, and their constituency. And so some jurisdictions have done things, like you said, about putting out drop boxes, so either special designated drop boxes just for ballots. Others, I thought, have come up with some really creative solutions. In some communities where the libraries, let's say, are not open to the public yet, they might have used a library drop-off box because it's secure, it's in a secured building, it's probably going to have surveillance on it already, and they've used those as drop boxes. One thing I'll just remind everyone is if you're using drop boxes, so if there's a ballot drop-off box in your community, and there may be, a lot of communities are doing this, just make sure, again, that ballot is put in there by the marked time. So that ballot has to go down to the polls by 8 p.m. on Election Day. So your drop box might say last pickup is at 7 p.m. on Election Day or whatever the deadline is that they've set. Just make sure that you've got your ballot there in time for it to be counted.
So the Elections Commission received funding through the CARES Act to assist with the upcoming elections. How much money did you receive from the federal government, and where is it directed?
So we received about $7 million in terms of the CARES Act grants funding, and well over half of it, about 60% of it, is going to those local municipal clerks. And this is to help make sure that they have envelopes, postage, maybe things like physical plexiglass barriers at the polling places, drop boxes, whatever that jurisdiction needs in order to be able to make sure that they're able to adjust to the new voter behavior as a result of COVID. And so most of those grant funds are going to those local jurisdictions. There was also a significant portion of the funds that were also utilized for buying supplies. So we know it's really hard to buy sanitizer, masks, all those things. And so asking 1,850 places to do that was difficult. And so we decided as a state we would buy those things for them and send them out to the jurisdictions, which we've already done. And then lastly, also we are going to be sending out a mailer to all voters in September to let them know about their three statutory ways to vote and how to interact with the election process as we head into November.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.